So thanks, baby. That was great. Really enjoyed it. So I'm going to read exclusively from my pamphlet, which is, and I think Sarah, my editor, is watching on YouTube. So I'll just say hi to Sarah and hold up the pamphlet, which never seems to be in focus when I hold it up to a camera. But anyway, a little bit shocked column that you actually don't have it already, that you're looking forward to getting it as a prize. So I'm going to read, I'll start in the middle, and I'll read a short poem called Fly. Dear insect, your ribs will go on rising and falling like the stock market. You will go on living all afternoon to spite me. I pulled off your wings, stopping your fizz at the window. I called to your mother at her seasoning, her answer still coming. I stuck stained glass veins to your fingers with spit. You soared over the privet, fomenting against topiary. Approaching the sun, you grew stranger. You became a crop sprayer, ballasting the clouds with blood. And when I was in the editorial process with Sarah, one word got changed in that poem, which I think was quite important in retrospect. I'm not going to tell you which one it was. So the next poem on the next page is called Kingfisher. And this is dedicated to friends of mine in the UK, Walter and Yvonne Mills, who are up there in the wilds of Norwich. Walter is a scientist that I worked with in Cambridge many years ago, and I go to visit there pretty regularly. But I'm well acquainted with kingfishers, as I'm sure many of you are. Kingfisher. The kingfisher is not just a dash of local colour, not colour TV for sticklebacks and wrens. No, it is simply itself in the lost and found grotto of the British Natural History Museum, under the rapturous eyes of Darwin and Huxley. And it is a falsifiable tremor in the gene pool, which would have pleased Peter Medawar. In fact, it is more than it knows of itself, as its phenotype extends beyond the shitty nest hole and the bare branch posed by trapper or photographer. And please note that this bird invented the gun for exuberant Victorians, Kodachrome, and this poem. So those of you who read popular science will be familiar with Richard Dawkins. So Dawkins wrote a famous book called The Extended Phenotype, and so that poem sort of tries to encapsulate some of the ideas around that concept. The next one I'll read is on the facing page, The Fish Behind My Shoulder, and this is based on a dream, a sort of a half dream. I remember waking up and had this almost you know, real experience of a stream trickling behind my shoulder and a fish. And it relates to actually a sort of a shoulder or an arm ache that I had at the time. I think that was the origin of it. So the fish behind my shoulder. He's been there for weeks, the fish behind my shoulder. At first I thought it was muscle spasm. My upper arm ached at the time and was vulnerable to psychosomatosis or synesthesia. But that cleared up and still he's there like a persistent lesion. He's definitely not a cleaner fish attending to parasites and dead tissue, at least not that I've noticed. A freshwater species, I'm sure, because I've felt the gravel beds scoured by freshets and the runs made by baby eels. Of course, I've never seen him. He's brown, though, with a pale lemon underside, like my forearm at the end of summer. His mouthwork is robotic, but he's not averse to a playful flick of his tail or a sudden rush and feint that starts and stops without seeming to. I have had to learn to take care of myself when starting, in case I shatter something I can't quite comprehend. I have begun to think of him as my twin. We might be joined at a fin. I face into things now. Watch my back. And I'll skip back to the first. I haven't read this The first poem in the book is called The Astronaut, and I've kind of mixed feelings about this poem, although it did deliver quite a nice prize many years ago, but I got a lot of grief from some members of my family about it, because they're simple country folk, and they essentially think that if you write a poem in the first person, it's fully autobiographical, which isn't true, but nevertheless, it would be a fake poem if there wasn't some kind of core of you know, emotional truth, I guess, in it. As I said, the autobiographical aspect is an invention, or at least aspect of it. So The Astronaut. I turn the landing light on and put the twins to bed. It's not late, so I refill my glass and touch it to my forehead before knocking it back. The French windows are open, and my old friend, the lame fox, is back, nosing down the cinder path to the barred gate. I'm fine on nights like this, in short sleeves in front of the TV. I ease into my pilot's seat and set the remote to stun. Often I'll sleep. After she had gone, we ate out all the time. Quarter pounders, kids complete meals. Her mother was no help. I found a diary and a lock of hair, which I flushed. In the box bedroom, the portable TV on the floor was hot as a soldering iron, broadcasting static, the unending echo of the Big Bang filling the house like a silent gas. When the house phone rang, I used to dash back in. The trellis cloaking the oil tank took me once on a comet ride into the garden wall. They found me, eyes wide shut like a resuscitation doll, the wooden lattice mapping the pressure nodes of my body. A sharp breeze cuts across my ribs. I step out onto the patio and tilt back on my heels, buffeted by 60 billion neutrinos per second per square centimeter of human tissue. Stars are being born in the arms of galaxies, and I have two lives in my hands. I scan the lights of the city. County Hall is a hive. Its windows ooze royal jelly. It was her call, honey, can you please shut the garage door while you're out there, that set me rocking. The rotary clothesline, its canopy burnt off, has an astronaut buried beneath. I pull it from the ground, raise it above my head, and test my weight. So I'll continue. There are two more poems, sort of maybe a bit geographically or astronomically related to that. So the next one is called Meteorites, and this was published in Southward, again, maybe about 10 years ago. So Meteorites. The news reports have us out by the side of the house, craning our necks to the northeast, where Cassiopeia is slung between a telegraph pole and the chestnut tree. Behind us, the television is flickering through the curtains as we wait for the Perseids to show. We get plenty of time to debate that light beetling across the sky. Are satellites visible to the naked eye? And while we're here, perhaps, I should point out the broken chute where sparrows nest year in, year out, and the snails streaking across the wall, intent on their own galaxy. And the next one is called Canyon. So Matthew Sweeney very kindly published this in Southward. So Canyon. Don't talk about water, its three-sided flare. Insinuate a gold leaf lizard, its footprint fugue, its iron sphere. Red-eyed Apache pocket mice are the sole Doppler signifiers of this jammed all-night expressway. A single buzzard wing swings on a flagpole like a half-hinged saloon car door. Schmett Pepper's only son has gone to Detroit to retrofit the velociraptor genome to the egg of a midwife toad. Something more zealous than squeezed light must have come through here. Something must have scooped out this terrain. Somewhere there's a mountain. So how am I doing on time? Paul, should I maybe one or two more?
Oh yeah, you're very good for time, Tom.
Okay, yeah. Well, so I'll do two or three more, and just start banging the dustbin lids if you want me to stop. So I'll read a poem I like, actually, a kind of a slightly strange one, maybe. And if anybody can tell me what it's about, I'd be very grateful. So, Vampire and Snowman. Inside my heart, many tiny hearts, each with a shopping trolley. I tap my chest, bats fly out. Hey, yo. My bones were near the surface of my body when I embraced Snowman. Nothing flowed, but the cold was like spice. Lungs unfurled to wings, anatomical ruins. Then the heart trilled in its cavity. So I will, I think I'll read as it's nearby. Carl Linnaeus's Herbarium Cabinet. So this is dedicated to Dean Brown, who, along with Sarah Byrne, gave me a push to follow on from a shorter Linnaeus poem, which I'd written. So this poem really wouldn't exist if Dean and Sarah hadn't given me a shove. So Carl Linnaeus's Herbarium Cabinet. His classification system was based on the sexual organs. He himself was the type specimen for Homo sapiens, there being no other example to hand with which he had sufficient intimacy. Sarah Lisa and the children numbered 8 in total. Johann died aged 3. Carl Jr. never married, ending the von Linne name. You will count 200 descendants through 2 daughters. Christopher Tarnstrom, his first apostle, was a youngish pastor. He boarded the East India Company ship Kalmar for China, but died en route in Vietnam. Tarnstrom's widow tarred Linnaeus with making her children fatherless. Thereafter, he preferred to send out younger unmarried students, 6 of whom died on their expeditions. He himself never again left Sweden. Linnaeus sectioned his herbarium cabinet after the number of stamens of plants he himself had pressed onto loose sheets. After his death, his collection sold to Sir James Edward Smith, who founded the Linnaean Society of London 5 years later. Gronovius named Linnaeus's favorite flower, Linnaei borealis, little twin flower, edelweiss of pine heaths and old Finnish forests. Following in Linnaeus's footprints in Swedish Lapland in 2017, James Prozek wrote in the New York Times, "On a walk along the Lule River where it met the bay, we found a species of willow, Salix pentandra, a leaf of which Linnaeus drew near this spot. Staffan plucked the leaf from the tree and laid it on the facsimile of the journal. It matched perfectly, as if Linnaeus himself had traced that very leaf." So maybe one more, Paul. So just maybe I'll read Brother Adam, which is the title poem, I guess I should. So I'll finish up with this one. And this is dedicated to Mick and Kathleen Wolfe, who are, I was at school with their son, Eamon. For many years, and Mick was the, I think, the president of the Irish Beekeepers Association for many years, and he actually met Brother Adam once upon a time. So, Brother Adam, the past is a foreign country. So is its synonym, Germany. His mother posts the 12-year-old cow Curly to the novitiate of the Benedictines of St. Mary's Abbey. In Germany, it will always be 1910. Unhappy novice, a mason's lot is not in your hod. Come down and help Brother Columban with the bees. Carl, it is 1916 and all the bees are dying. Carl, how fare your countrymen at Ypres? The weather is unpredictable here, but Dartmoor offers the prospect of a second honey flow in August. Then the nectar is from heather, hawthorn, sycamore. All of this has happened here before. He is unmatched as a breeder of bees. He talks to them, strokes them. He brings a calmness that, according to those who see him work, the bees respond to. He does so while being carried backwards up Kilimanjaro. But let the bees tell you, haunting his own motto, he becomes one of nature's silent workers. The bees keep leading him to yarrow, self-heal, poppy. This is how he escapes the 20th century. French scientists in the 30s prove that bees can't fly, but he is down in the spinney retrieving a swarm. A bee's wings beat more than 200 times a second. He has fallen asleep over Professor Armbruster's laws. Two prized queens are stolen from the Buckfast apiaries. Police issue the following description: 3/4 inch in length with dark brown and dark grey stripes. Cal Curly, wake up, wake up. A worker has space, but no time, no time, no time. A worker is her own landing craft in centripetal spoke, homing her cargo to the vortex of the hive. How to woo a honeybee with veils and gloves and smoke. Thank you very much.